why?
Every window in the house bowed.
You're a scion! A healer! Why?
Her hands curled into fists as she stared at me, her proud spiked hair beginning to droop. Spots of fevered color blossomed on her cheeks and her lower lip trembled.
I can kill her. I can kill her right now. Right fucking now.
I shook with the urge to do just that.
But I want to make this last, and I want to know why.
We were poor!
Her eyes lingered on the mess of meat that was her brother.
Her board paid for my academy schooling. I was in debt up to my eyeballs, and Gil, he never made enough. And he was gonna give it away, Valentine! Give away the cure! The stupid motherfucking Skinlan was gonna ruin everything! You don't know! He was rich! He had his rich girl necromancer!
On money? You hatched this plan, bombed your own clinic, arranged Eddie's death, arranged Gabe's death, collaborated in the murder of how many more? For money?! How many of you killed? And how many have fucking died of Jill while you tried to cover everything up? Sirens?
Pontside probably had time to trigger a call for help on his HDOC. The Saint City PD were on their way.
It doesn't matter. If they had a hand in this, I'll kill them too.
The ease and naturalness of the thought should have disturbed me. My hand twitched, the tip of my blade making a precise little circle, painting blue flame on the air. From the runes running along the keen edge, the steel's heart flamed white, full of bloodlust and chill certainty.
You've never been poor. You don't know!
I've been fucking poor. I've eaten heat seal, and sometimes not even that. I was poor and hungry for years, you stupid bitch. I did espionage and bounty hunting. But I never assassinated anyone!
It isn't strictly true. I've killed in self-defense and I killed Santino, but that's different, isn't it? I don't kill without cause.
My own words rose up to taunt me.
No. By the gods, this is cause. This is vengeance.
She jerked her chin in the direction of her brother's body.
Congratulations. That makes him your first.
How dare you, you piece of shit!
Blue fire crawled up my sword to caress my hand. I stopped, my jaw dropping as I stared at the shivering Setayin.
No, it can't be!
The world slowed. Time stopped. Blue fire closed over my vision, and I felt the touch of my god slipping through the stubborn, torn, raw layers of my mind. The feeling was weightless, like leaving the meat of the body behind and rising into the clear, rational light of what comes next. The great secret death whispers into the ears of the departing. My left shoulder squeezed with sudden, sharp pain.
Yeah.
I fell back into the low guard, the blade slanting up and singing a high, thin, keening note as my steel recognized the presence of the only power I bowed my head to, Death himself.
This little bitch, this traitor, is who Death wants me to spare? This is the gash laid on me by my god, who I have always trusted with everything, my life, my fears, my vulnerability itself?
His deep, infinity-starred eyes rested against mine.
Choice is yours. It is always yours.
No. No. I want to kill her. I ache. I hunger to strike, to carve, to watch the blood flow, to end her miserable life. I've sworn. Am I required to break the oath I've sworn to my best friend, my only friend?
Anubis at their cup!
The prayer died on my lips. My vision cleared. I saw her teeth pulled back in a grimace of effort as she cowered against the counter. She was Setayin, a healer, incapable of defending herself.
But she was perfectly fucking capable of betraying Eddie, of tossing Gabe's house while looking for the cure, capable of lying to me. Lying like Jaffermel, lying like a stone-faced demon. Lying worse than a demon, even. Jaff hid things from me for a reason!
Cameron,
Your bodyguard. Pico Fies.
She's suspected. We were gonna eliminate her at the clinic, but she was Pico Fies' corporate too. She was gonna meet Masada yesterday when he called from Tanner's, gabbling something about seeing you. We had to.
Her eyes flicked down to Pontside's body again.
He did it.
Realization detonated like a reaction fire in my head.
The team waiting to assassinate near the clinic weren't Tanner family troops. They were off-duty Saint City police normals, crooked cops sent to get rid of an inconvenient bodyguard who was maybe starting to ask too many questions. Then I showed up and Mercy lied with a cool ease that put even Lucifer to shame. Cam was going to meet her death yesterday while I was in a demon house. If they hadn't taken me, I might have saved her too!
Airborne supplied the staff for the hit on Eddie. It was routine given the amount of profit you were talking about. But for Gabe, you needed more. You needed crooked cops. With your brother in the lead.
She said nothing. There was nothing she could say. I was right.
I should kill you.
She slid down the side of the island until she crouched.
I should kill you slowly. I should send you to hell in the flesh. I should kill you.
Go ahead! Go ahead, you goddamn fucking freak!
The next few seconds are hazy. I dropped my sword. Then I had her by the throat. Lifted up so her feet dangled. My fingers iron in her soft, fragile human flesh. The cuff pulsed coldly. Green light painted the inside of the kitchen in a flash of aqueous light. My lips pulled back, rage boiling in every single blood vessel. Heat poured from me, the air steaming, what was left of the glass fogging, the wood cabinet facings popping as they expanded with the sudden temperature shift, the floor shaking and juddering. The entire house trembled on its foundations as whatever Pontside and Mercy and their merry crew of dirty fucking Saint City cops hadn't broken as they searched the house shattered.
It is your choice. It is always your choice.
In Death's voice, I heard the infinite kindness of the god I had sworn my life to.
If I deny him, he will still accept me, still love me. But he should not have asked this of me!
She was helpless and unarmed, incapable of fighting back. But she was guilty, and she had lied and murdered as surely as any bounty I'd ever chased.
Anubis and their Ka. Kill. Kill her! Kill her! Kill her!
But she can't fight back.
This is murder, Dante.
I couldn't tell if the reply was Anubis, or some voice from the heart of me. There was only one prayer I could utter as I shook, trembling on the verge of grateful insanity.
Jeframel.
The mark on my shoulder twisted again. I reached for him, for help, for strength, for anything.
Jeframel. Oh gods, help me.
Strength flooded through the demon mark on my left shoulder. No answer. Except the soft velvet heat of power sliding through his name scarred into my skin, dappling my entire body with heat. A piece of his power, given without reserve or hesitation.
Did he just feel it when I drew on the mark? Did he care?
Did it matter? I dropped her. My hands shook. Hot tears splashed onto the sweater Eve had given me. The house groaned again, complaining, and then settled on its foundations. The god waited, his presence filling the room, invisible but heavy. I smelled Kiffy and the odor of stone, felt the invisible wind of the blue crystal hall of death touch my cheeks, ruffle my hair. My god waited to see what I would do. If I would spare this traitor at his request, or if I would strike.
If I kill her, like this, am I any better than her and her brother? Am I any better right now? Oh gods, who am I?
I no longer knew.
Thy will be done!
Move it, move it!
I backed away. I picked up my sword from the debris-littered floor, slid the blade home in its sheath slowly, every muscle in my body protesting. My hands and legs shook with the urge to rip the metal free, pace back to the helpless, cringing animal on the floor, and finish her off as bloodily and painfully as I could. The god's presence had faded bit by bit. I had felt it go.
Kill her!
Rage swirled through my skull. Tender, bruised places on my psyche cracked under the strain.
She betrayed Gabe! Kill her!
I walked heavily out of the kitchen. I paused for a moment in the middle of the dark hallway, my head down, hair curtaining my face. I heard lace cutters at the front door. Blood slipped down my skin, warm and wet. My feet moved, carrying me into the front hall. I lowered myself down on the steps, watching the bright points of light as the laser cutters began slicing through the maid-shielded door to let the Saint City PD back into Gabe's house. As I sat there, I rocked back and forth, both hands wrapped around my sword, softly repeating in the deepest recesses of my brain the only prayer I had left, since my god had betrayed me too.
Jeffremil, I need you. Jeffremil!
Acid 10 has confirmed everything. The lab sent out the formula to the West Coast Chill Clinics. For real this time.
Horman stood in front of me, hunched his shoulders like a turtle, pulled his bald head down. Fog crept up the sides of the house. Moisture breathed in the air. The storm had moved inland and left a foggy, dark 5 a.m. in its wake. Gabe's house rose above us, lights blazing. Finally, her death was being investigated by the cops for real. I should have checked. All Mercy had to do was send it to a drop fax number. My throat ached. I'd been hoodwinked by a Sedain. If I'd been able to care, I might have blushed with embarrassment. I never guessed you were internal affairs, Lou.
I never guessed you were a fucking moron.
His beady eyes sparked for a moment. The shoulders of his tan trench were damp. His breath plumed in the air.
You didn't even check for a TRAN number on a fucking data fax.
I shrugged. Dried blood covered my clothes. Ponside had shot me 6 times, probably counting on volume of lead to kill me as it had killed Eddie and Gabe. Most of the bullets had gone right through me, black demon blood closing the holes and inhuman flesh twitching to expel any chunks that hadn't escaped. The twitches were only now fading as demon adrenaline leached out of my tissues. We watched. The night exhaling fog between street lamps as the lights went out and the last of the techs filed out of Gabe's house. The entire place had been dusted and scanned, finally, and a reader would be sent in tomorrow morning. Not that it was necessary. There was more than enough proof to indict Mercy, and she was so terrified she would probably testify against both Herborn and the circle of dirty cops. Whoever was left after I had attacked them at the clinic and escaped them in the rat hole.
There's gonna be a lot of empty desks in the Saint City South Precinct house.
And a lot of freelance bounty hunters would be very busy tracking down whoever fled from justice. It would take a long time to get it all sorted out. I was no longer suspected of killing my best friend. The police hovers I'd destroyed and cops I'd killed in self-defense wouldn't be mentioned. After all, the department wouldn't like to admit to a conspiracy this big, funded by chill money, in its own hallowed halls. It was bad for their image. Horman, leaning against a police hover, shifted his bulk from one foot to the other. The hover's landing springs sighed as he settled his ample ass more firmly against the plasteel hull.
The kid.
She's safe. I know where she is.
God damn it, I can't believe I was so stupid as to miss that for even a moment. I'm slipping in my old age.
Guilt pinched me. I should have been planning to hunt down the rest of them.
I should personally dispatch everyone who had anything to do with the whole sordid plot. I owe it to Gabe.
It was a debt I wasn't going to be able to pay. I had broken my word twice now. Once to Lucifer, and once to my best and only friend.
Don't suppose you're gonna tell me where she is, huh?
Not with half the precinct implicated in a murder plot against her mother, no. The simmering smell of decaying fruit and spice from my blood was damped by the fog, beginning to thicken in earnest, wrapping the world in cotton wool.
It ain't half the precinct, Deadhead. Just some dirty-ass cops.
His neck flushed beet red. He reeked of Chivas soy whiskey. His tie was askew, and there was a stain on his shirt that looked suspiciously like mustard.
I'm still alive.
Herborn Corp was already disassociating itself, claiming Mercy hadn't been acting under its directives. That told both Horman and me that they had supplied the team for Eddie's death. It would come out in court, and the corporation would be dissolved. The publicity was going to be hell. Gil Ponside's pockets held, among other things, a handheld EMP pulse generator that should have been sitting in a tech locker at the precinct house. Annette Cameron had been found in the tank, her body riddled with bullets and her dat band blinking, flushed red. I wondered if the bullets would match up to the ones used to kill Eddie or Gabe, and if her death was to have been blamed on me or the Tanner family as well. I wondered how Asa Tanner had survived the demon attack on his house to capture me and bring me to Eve. Wondered if we were even now, the Werecane mob boss and me. Wondered where Lucas and Leander were. I wondered if Jaffra Mel was free yet.
Time to get back to work.
My shoulders ached with tension. I rolled them back in their sockets, my sword thrust through the loop on my rig. I still didn't trust myself. I've got other business to handle. I trust I won't have any more problems with you brave boys and girls in blue.
Go fuck yourself.
Thanks to you, too. The air was chill through the bullet holes in my clothes. Eve's clothes.
I'm getting really hard on my laundry.
Hey, Valentine.
I stopped, but didn't turn. My neck steel taut. My shoulders as hard as hover mooring cables. The sensation of being watched returned, stronger than ever, scraping against my nerves. The gauntlet was silver again, and so very cold. As cold as the inside of my chest, maybe.
What? Be careful what you say to me right now, Sunshine. I'm in a very bad mood.
That was the goddamn understatement of the year. I was ready to explode, and I wasn't sure anyone in my path would be safe once I did. Guilty or innocent.
Your good friend. Gabe would be proud.
I didn't do what I promised. I left her killer, Eddie's killer, alive. I turned my back on the man I love, and I'm about to break my word once more and turn against the devil, who's going to be very unhappy with me if he isn't already.
Thanks. He said nothing else as I walked away, heading for Gabe's front gate and the rest of all my problems. In the depths of the tank, I found a call box that hadn't been gutted, picked up the phone and dialed a number still scored into my Magi-trained memory. It was still dark, and everyone there was likely to be busy with the night's games.
House of Love.
I stared out through the plas glass of the booth's sides, scanning. Dante Valentine for Polyamor.
Miss Valentine, yes? Sorry, please hold.
I watched a hooker pace her piece of cracked concrete across the street. She wore blue pleather pants and a white synth fur coat, her clear Placilica platform heels twinkling in the foggy light from the street lamp. She cocked a hip as a hover drifted by. Her shoulders slumped as it passed out of sight. She went back to pacing,
Dante?
My shoulders tightened a little more. Polly. Steve, the name she'd been born with. I could almost see her, leaning against a chair with a sleek white Ceramo phone pressed to her ear. Her exquisite transvestite face ever so slightly creased with worry.
It's all over the news. Don't worry. Everything's taken care of.
I've got some business. Will you take care of...
I said it's taken care of, Dante. Dante, you sound...
I'll be back, but I don't know when.
I'm lying. I'm sorry, Polly. I don't think I'm coming back. I promised Gabe I'd look after her daughter, but if I've got demons after me, what else can I do? She's safer with you.
She's in good hands, Dante. Come back soon. And, Dante, if you wanted to come tonight, I would be happy to see you.
I can't.
It's too dangerous, especially with demons in town.
But I'll be back as soon as I can. I promised.
I promised Gabe, and I'm about to break that promise. Break my word. Again.
Be careful. Dante, we had a visitor. A green-eyed thing. He said he was from you. I didn't give him anything.
My heart froze in my chest. Blonde?
If Lucifer knows about Gabe's daughter...
What?
Was he blonde?
No. Tall, dark, and grim. A long black coat, nice boots.
When?
3 hours ago.
I closed my eyes.
Jaframel is out. And probably looking for me.
I'll be back when I can. Do you need anything?
What, money? An armed guard? What can I possibly give her now that I'm about to be hunted by something more than a few dirty cops?
It's taken care of. When you come back, you're free to stay here. I haven't forgotten.
Neither have I. I rested my forehead against the plasglass. One problem temporarily shelved. The cold crept up my arm and finally slid past Jaframel's mark on my shoulder. A fishhook settling into flesh and twitching. After a few moments of tranced, exhausted wondering, I finally placed the sensation. It wasn't a sense of being watched now. It was the knowledge that I was being pulled. The premonition rose up in front of me. Now that I was too exhausted to move, it had a chance to rise through dark water and unreel in front of me. The inner eye blind except for the vision of my boot toes moving against cracked pavement. I lifted my head, shaking free of the vision with an effort. When I could look out at the world again, everything had changed. Not much, just a little of the color had gone. My demon-sharp sight blurring. A layer of gray covered every surface, from the cracked street to the uneven paving and the tired skin of the hooker still pacing across the street. The old wounds, Lucifer's kick, hellhound claws, and now bullet holes, all twitched as if they were about to reopen. I wondered what the limit was to my body's regeneration. Maybe I would find out now.
Danny, that's a spectacularly pessimistic thought, even for you.
There was a faint green gleam at the edges of my eyesight, reflected off the plasglass of the booth's walls. The cuff glowed, and as my eyes locked onto it, I suddenly knew, with an instinctive jolt, what I had to do next. The compulsion settled home, humming in the metal of the demon artifact. And the sensation of numb cold Jaframel's mark had been fighting off closed around me like walls of diamond ice.
Time to throw all the dice down and see where they land, Danny. If you can't do something right, do what you have to.
I trailed my fingers over my sword hilt. What I was contemplating was madness. It was sheer suicide. The compulsion tapped at my brain, whispered in my ears. Pulled at my fingers and toes.
Come on. Come with me. Someone wants to see you, Dante.
I lowered my head and banged out of the call box. I knew where I needed to go. compulsion married to premonition, instinct and logic rising and twining together, spoke in an undeniable whisper, like the voice of a star sapphire on its platinum chain. Like the chill, lipless voice of the wrist cuff, glowing on my wrist and finally tugging me in the right direction. Gently, but with increasing urgency.
Taxi!
I caught a cab on the corner of Fisk and Averly. Thank the gods there was little traffic at that hour. Usually the other drivers keep up a steady string of invectives at other hover pilots. A cab can run on an AI deck for everything other than takeoff and landing. But hover cab drivers won exemption status under the AI Job Loss Prevention Act, and so were mostly fanatically determined to prove that a human was better than an AI for the cab riding experience. I suppose it was nostalgia or nervousness that made them keep cursing. When he let me out, I smelled the heavy, wet, blind scent of the sea. Fog was rolling in. I could catch a transport out to Paradise, or a hover train to North New York, Jersey, or another hub.
Will Jaframel and Hellespont be watching the transports for me?
I would have to figure something out. I didn't want to lead him to Eve.
Dante, you know it doesn't matter.
When I got to the low, slumped building, I found the demonic shields on the dilapidated place that had once been a school were now earthed. There was no sign of anyone, demon, human, or other. As I pushed through the broken-down fencing and paced over the cracked concrete of the outside grav ball court. My right hand was clamped around my sword hilt. The place was silent.
Too silent. And it reeks of spice and power. The smell of demon.
Gravel crunched underneath me. The sounds of tiny, breaking bones. I flinched as soon as I thought that. Drew my sword. Blue flame dripped along its keen edge. Glad to be free. The cuff on my wrist thrummed, pulling me forward as if a fine chain was attached to it, pulling me along, just like a leash bringing a bloodhound in.
If I can't spill the traitor's blood, I'll settle for trying to kill a demon. I'll die, of course. I can't kill a demon, no matter how minor.
Can't I? I killed a hellhound. I also killed an imp with the help of a lot of reactive paint.
A hellhound's not the same thing, Danny. Neither is an imp. What you're about to try is suicide.
It was. What else did I have left? Even the most faithless of traitors could redeem themselves by choosing the moment of their death.
Just going to have a chat with an old friend.
The chilling little giggle that rose in my throat didn't comfort me. There was no amusement in it. I let myself into the building I'd just left this afternoon. It felt like a lifetime ago.
Eve isn't here. And Jaframel in all likelihood isn't here. But I think someone might be here. Someone I've met before.
Premonition blurred under my skin, pushed me forward, impelled as surely by my own minor talent for seeing the future as by the cold glow of the gauntlet leading me on. The mark on my shoulder was a glove of soft heat, curiously distant, trying to reach through the shell of ice. The wrist cuff dulled. Green light stretched forward, easing me along, seducing me through the labyrinth, luring me.
Gods help me.
Head held high, sword ready, I walked into the open jaws of the building. The school resembled a stage set now. Its walls bare and white. No furniture left. Everything was gone, except the faint echo of musk. I extended a little past the borders of my shields. Power swirled, uneasy. My own fragrance of spice and musk rising to twine with a darker scent.
I know that smell.
Phantom goosebumps crawled up my spine, ruffled my upper arms, and spilled down my forearms. I clenched my jaw, pain blooming down my neck. But my stance was good, and I checked the halls and empty rooms, working closer to an almost familiar part of the building.
The gymnasium.
The layout of the school was clear in my mind. In the end, I simply stopped checking the rooms and walked slowly through the halls. Fog creeping up from the bay wrapped the entire building in a cotton blanket of silence. It might have been the last night of the world.
For all I know, it might be.
The cuff on my wrist pulled me on. I didn't resist. It was useless to resist. The voice of self-preservation shrieked at me. I paid it no mind. There was only one thing I could do now. One action that was mine alone.
Lucifer wants to kill me.
Fine. But I'll choose the place and the time. The door to the gymnasia reared up in front of me. I didn't even have to touch it, because it opened at my approach. A slice of ruddy light showed, and I could see leather-bound books, a rich patterned red rug. I smelled wood smoke. The door was wrong. It pulsed, its lintels swaying like seaweed. I blinked, hoping my eyes were deceiving me for the first time in my long, angry life. Power fumed in the air.
There were no books here before.
Goosebumps, real goosebumps, turned hard and prickling on my arms, little fingertips trying to claw free of my skin.
I've never had goosebumps before. Not in this demon's body.
My blade began to sing. Blue flame dripping wetly from its point to smoke on the floor, scorching the hardwood. My shield shivered, on the verge of locking down to protect me.
There's only one demon who would go to these absurd lengths of theater.
I peered through a door torn in the fabric of the world, and into a room I was unhappily almost familiar with. A neo-Victorian study done in crimson and heavy wood, carpeted in plush crimson. Leather-clad books lined up on bookcases against the dark-paneled wooden walls. Three red velvet chairs in front of a roaring fireplace. Red-tasseled drapes drawn over what might have been a window. A large mahogany desk sat obediently to one side. Next to one red velvet chair by the fireplace stood a slim figure clad in black. His mane of golden hair blazed in the firelit richness of the room. A second sun. The cuff on my wrist glowed. Frosty green light swirling around me like colored oil on water. The gauntlet was from Lucifer. I'd been warned several times not to take anything from the prince.
But Jeff Ramil put it back on my wrist again while I slept, didn't he? I hadn't done it. And if I'd been asleep so deeply, I didn't know Jeff Ramil was leaving me during the day to hunt down Eve. Would I know Lucifer was sneaking into the room? McKinley is a Hellesfront agent. And anyway, would he be able to stop the Prince of Hell from opening up reality and walking right into a room?
The thought of lying asleep, dead to the world while the devil was in the room, sent a sharp spike of terror through me. Everything else was gray. Covered with a leaden film. But through that door, in hell, color sprang to life, sparked by his hair. The shadows of bullet holes, twinging fiercely, melded shut in the warm bath of power that curled along my skin and stifled the sob trying to escape my throat. The gauntlet yanked forward, pulling me behind it. Jaframel's mark on my shoulder was warm and forgiving, tautly alert. Lucifer looked back over his silk-clad shoulder, presenting me with a quarter profile of a face more sheerly beautiful than any demon's. The emerald glowed mellow in his forehead, and the wrist cuff sparked with light.
His eyes. It echoes his eyes. It's exactly the same color.
Come in, Dante. Sit down. Let us better understand each other.
Don't miss the pulse-pounding conclusion to the Dante Valentine saga in Dante Valentine 5, To Hell and Back. Coming soon in graphic audio.
Dante Valentine Book 4, Saint City Sinners, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, Lilith St. Crow. Published by arrangement with Hachette Book Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Colleen Delaney, Christopher Sheeran, Joseph Thornhill, Terrence Aselford, Yasmin Toison, Amanda Thickpenny, M.B. Van Dorn, Lily Beacon, Elizabeth Demery, James Lewis, Kimberly Gilbert, David Coyne, Thomas Keegan, Eric Messner, Mort Shelby, Tim Getman, James Keegan, Dan Stevens, Karen Carbone, Richard Rowan, Rose Elizabeth Supan, James Konacek, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Nathaniel Perry, and Joe Brack. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Johann Detweiler and Rose Elizabeth Supan. Graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry and Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Rose Elizabeth Supan. If you enjoy Dante Valentine, be sure to look for E.E. Knight's Vampire Earth Saga and Brent Week's Night Angel Trilogy. Both available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Graphic Audio presents DC Comics, Green Lantern, Sleepers, Book 3.
Wait, you're a Green Lantern, right? You can't!
The spirit of vengeance has come for you, Detective.
The world, the universe, something's wrong.
Of course it is.
How do you know?
If it wasn't, neither of us would dress this way.
I'm human again. This is how it starts, isn't it?
What the hell is going on?
Best I can tell, pal, the apocalypse.
Cal, what happened?
Hal Jordan tried to kill me.
Jade, Kyle's ring has security lockouts that prevent others from using it. The only person who could possibly use it is the ring's original owner.
That man is a killer, and now you want me to just give him Kyle's ring?
Kyle battled one sleeper and almost lost the solar system. We're facing thousands.
Promise me you won't go insane and destroy entire planets again.
I can't. Oh my God. It's the JLA. They're all sleepers.
And so Hal Jordan dies, and Sinestro lives.
Green Lantern and all names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.
Glossary. Ananchimel. Demon term. 1. A fallen demon. 2. A demon who has tied himself to a human mate. Note. As with all demon words, there are several layers of meaning to this term, depending on context and pronunciation. The meanings, from most common to least, are as follows. Descent from a great height, chained, shield, a guttering flame, a fallen statue. Androgyne. 1. A transsexual, cross-dressing, or androgynous human. 2. Demon term, a greater flight demon, capable of reproduction. Anemone. An accredited scion with the ability to telepathically connect with and heal animals, generally employed as veterinarians. Anubis et Herka, Egyptianica term, sometimes used as an expletive. Loosely translated, Anubis protect me or us. The Awakening. The exponential increase in psionic and sorcerous ability, academically defined as from just before the fall of the Republic of Gilead to the culmination of the Parapsychic Act, codifying psionic power and the Paranormal Species Act,
giving protection and voting rights to paranormal species, a dual triumph for the alternately vilified and worshipped Senator Adrian Ferriman. Note, after the fall of the Republic, the Awakening was said to have finished, and the proportion of psionics to normals in the human population stabilized, though there are fluctuations occurring in 70-year cycles to this day. Ceremonial. 1. An accredited psion whose talent lies in working with traditional sorcery, accumulating power and spending it in controlled bursts. 2. Ceremonial magic, otherwise known as sorcery, instead of more organic, witchery. 3. Slang, any greater work of magic. Clorman 13. Slang names, chill, ice, rock smack, dust. Addictive alkaloid drug. Note, chill is high profit for the big pharmaceutical companies as well as the mob, being instantly addictive. There is no cure for chill addiction. Deadhead. 1. Necromancer. 2. Normal human without psionic abilities. Demon. 1. Any sentient alien intelligence, either corporeal or non-corporeal, that interacts with humans. 2. The denizens of hell, often mistaken for gods or Novo Christ or evil spirits. Actually, a sentient non-human species with technology and psionic or magical ability much exceeding humanity's. 3. Any member of the previous definition species. 4. Slang, a particularly bad physiological addiction. Evangelicals of Gilead. 1. Messianic Old Christer and Judic cult started by Kochbar Bar Gilead and led by him until the signing of the Gilead Charter, when power was seized by a cabal of military brass just prior to Bar Gilead's assassination. 2. Members of said cult. 3. Academic, the followers of Bar Gilead before the signing of the Gilead Charter. See Republic of Gilead. Feeder. 1. A scion who has lost the ability to process ambient power and depends on jolts of vital energy stolen from other human beings, scion or normal. 2. Scion slang, a fair-weather friend. Flight. A class or social rank of demons. Note, there are, strictly speaking, three classes of demons, the lower, lesser, and greater. Magi most often deal with the higher echelons of the low flight and the lower echelons of the lesser flight. Greater flight demons are almost impossible to control and very dangerous. Freetown, an autonomous enclave under a charter, neither hegemony nor Putschkin, but often allied to one or the other in matters of trade. Hedera, demon term. 1. An endearment. 2. A human woman tied to a fallen, an Ankhamel demon. Note, there are several layers of meaning depending on context and pronunciation. The meanings from most common to least are as follows: beloved, companion, vessel, starlight, sweet fruit, small precious trinket, and easily crushed bauble. The most uncommon and complex meaning can be roughly translated as slave or thing of pleasure who rules the master. Hegemony. One of the two world superpowers, comprising North and South America, Australia, New Zealand, most of Western Europe, Japan, some of Central Asia, and scattered diplomatic enclaves in China. Note, after the 70 Days' War, the two superpowers settled into peace and are often said to be one world government with two divisions. Hegemony Afrique is technically a hegemony protectorate, but that seems mostly diplomatic convention more than anything else. Ka. 1. Archaic usage, soul or mirror spirit, separate from the Ba and the physical soul in Egyptianica. 2. Fate, especially tragic fate that can't be avoided, destiny. 3. A link between two souls where each feeds the other's destiny. 4. Technical, terminus stage for feeder pathology, an externalized hungry consciousness capable of draining vital energy from a normal human in seconds and a scion in less than 2 minutes. Kobolding, also kobold. 1. Paranormal species characterized by a troll-like appearance, thick skin, and an affinity to elemental earth magic. 2. a member of the kobolding species. Left Hand. Sorceress discipline utilizing power derived from sinister means, as in bloodletting, animal or human sacrifice, or certain types of drug use. Corollary, left-hander, a follower of a left-hand path. Lutter, 1. Member of the conservative Lutter Party. 2. A person opposed to genetic manipulation or the use of psionic talent or both. 3. Slang, a technophobe. 4. Also slang, a hypocrite. Magi. Note, the term magus is archaic and hardly ever used. Magi has become singular or plural and neuter gender. 1. A scion who has undergone basic training. 2. The class of occult practitioners before the awakening who held and transmitted basic knowledge about psionic abilities as well as training techniques. 3. An accredited scion with the ability to bring a soul back from death to answer questions. Note, can also, in certain instances, heal mortal wounds and keep a soul from escaping into death. Master Nichtfrin. 1. A Nichtfrin who is free of obligation to his or her maker. 2. A Nichtfrin who holds territory. Merican. 1. The trade lingua of the globe and official language of the hegemony, though other dialects are rampant. 2. Archaic. A hegemony citizen. 3. Archaic. A citizen of the old American region before the 70 Days War. Necromancer. Slang, deadhead. An accredited scion with the ability to bring a soul back from death to answer questions. Note, can also in certain instances heal mortal wounds and keep a soul from escaping into death. Nichtfrin. Slang, suckhead. Altered human capable of living off human blood. Note, older Nichtfrin may possibly live off strong emotions, especially those produced by scions. Since they are altered humans, Nichtfrin occupy a space between humanity and other species. They are defined as a paranormal species and given citizens' rights under Adrian Ferriman's groundbreaking legislation after the Awakening. Nine Canons. A nine-part alphabet of runes drawn from around the globe and codified during the Awakening to manage psionic and sorcerous power, often used as shortcuts in magical circles or as quick charms. Note, separate from other branches of magic in that they are accessible sometimes even to normal humans by virtue of their long use and highly charged nature. Novo-Christianity. An outgrowth of a religion of submission popular from the 1100s to the latter half of the 21st century, before the meteoric rise of the Republic of Gilead and the 70 Days War. Note, the death knell of old Christianity is thought to be the great Vatican bank scandal that touched off the revolt leading to the meteoric rise of Cocba Bar Gilead, the charismatic leader of the Republic. Note, the Republic was technically fundamentalist old Christianity with Judaic messianic overtones. Nowadays, NC is declining in popularity and mostly fashionable among the middle upper class. Power. 1. Vital energy produced by living things, i.e. prana, mana, orgone, etc. 2. Sorcerous power accumulated by celibacy, bloodletting, fasting, pain, or meditation. 3. Ambient energy produced by ley lines and geocurrents, a field of energy surrounding the planet. 4. The discipline of raising and channeling vital energy, sorcerous power, or ambient energy. 5. Any form of energy that fuels sorceress or psionic ability. 6. A paranormal community or paranormal individual who holds territory. Prime power. 1. The highest ranked paranormal power in a city or territory, capable of negotiating treaties and enforcing order. Note, usually Nichtfrin in most cities and Werkane in rural areas. 2. Technical, the source from which all power derives. 3. Archaic usage, any non-human paranormal being with more than two vassals in the feudal structure of pre-awakening paranormal society. Scion. 1. An accredited, trained, or apprentice human with psionic abilities. 2. A human with psionic abilities. Puchkin. 1. The official language of the Puchkin Alliance, though other dialects are rampant. 2. a Pushkin Alliance citizen. Pushkin Alliance. One of the two world superpowers comprising Russia, most of China, except Freetown, Tibet, and Singapore, some of Central Asia, Eastern Europe, and the Middle East. Note, after the 70 Days' War, the two superpowers settled into peace and are often said to be one world government with two divisions. Republic of Gilead. Theocratic Old American Empire, based on fundamentalist Novo-Christer and Judic Messianic principles, lasting from the latter half of the 21st century, after the Vatican Bank scandal, to the end of the 70 Days' War. Note, in the early days, before Kokhbar Bar Gilead's practical assumption of power in the Western Hemisphere, the Evangelicals of Gilead were defined as a cult, not the Republic. Political infighting in the Republic brought about both the war and the only tactical nuclear strike of the war in the Vegas Waste. Revised Matheson Score. The index for quantifying the level of psionic ability. Note, like the Richter scale, it is exponential. 5 is the lowest score necessary for a psionic child to receive hegemony funding and schooling. 40 is the terminus of the scale. Anything above 40 is defined as superlative, and the scion is tipped into special hegemony secret services training. Rune Witch. A scion whose secondary or primary talent includes the ability to handle the runes of the 9 canons with more ease. Sedayin. 1. An accredited scion whose talent is healing. 2. Archaic usage. An old Nyctfren word meaning blue hand. Note, Sedayin are incapable even of self-defense, being allergic to violence and prone to feeling the pain they inflict. This makes them incredible healers, but also incredibly vulnerable. Sekhmet Saez. Egyptianica term, often used as obscenity. Translated, Sekhmet stamp it. A request for the Egyptos goddess of destruction to strike some object or thing. Much like the antique, God damn it. 70 Days' War. The conflict that brought about the end of the Republic of Gilead and the rise of the hegemony and Pushkin Alliance. Sex Witch. Archaic usage, Tantra Aiken. An accredited scion who works with power raised from the act of sex. Pain also produces an endorphin and energy rush for sex witches. Shaman. 1. The most common and catch-all term for a scion who has psionic ability, but does not fall into any other specialty, ranging from Vauden shamans who traffic with Loa to generic scions. 2. Archaic usage. A normal human with borderline psionic ability. SK8. Pronounced skate. Member of a slickboard tribe. Skinlin. Slang, dirt witch. An accredited scion whose talent has to do with plants and plant DNA. Note, Skinlin use their voices, holding sustained tones, wedded to power, to alter plant DNA and structure. Their training makes them susceptible to berserker rages. Slag fever. Sickness caused by exposure to chemical waste cocktails, commonly occurring near hover transport depots in less urban areas. Swanhild. Paranormal species characterized by hollow bones, feathery body hair, poisonous flesh, and passive and pacifistic behavior. Synth hash. Legal non-addictive stimulant and relaxant, synthesized from real hash, a derivative of opium, and cannabis. Note, synth hash replaced Nicotiana leaves, beloved of the Evangelicals of Gilead for the profits reaped by tax on its use, as the smoke of choice in the late 22nd century. Talent. 1. Psionic ability. 2. Magical ability. Werecane. Slang. Cane. Fur boy. Altered human capable of changing to a furred animal form at will. Note, there are several different subsets, including Lupercal and Magewolfen. Outsiders and normal humans are generally incapable of distinguishing between different subsets of Cane.